Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. And today's topic will be on the ACA, Past, Present, and Future. Now, Shelley, the 10-year anniversary of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is coming soon, on March 23rd, to be exact. Can you give us a short retrospective?
Yeah, it seems like the 10 years has gone by very quickly, but on the other hand, we've been living this for quite a long time. It was a little bit controversial to get this passed 10 years ago. A lot of things happened that made it move, and we had to make some additional laws to make sure that we had all the taxation proper. And then we had to go to court a few times, which we'll talk about here in the future. But the good news is that over 20 million more Americans have coverage because of the Affordable Care Act. And also we had a lot more employers that are now offering coverage. So roughly 180 million people have coverage via their employer. And the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is how it was passed and what it was originally called. We refer to it as the ACA right now, or sometimes as Obamacare, since Obama was the president when this was passed.
There are many ways for a person to purchase coverage, including on the exchange or marketplace, individual coverage from an insurance carrier, Medicaid expansion, and CHIP. Can you talk about where we are today with these programs and how they may change as we move forward?
Yes, that's a good synopsis of all of the ways that individuals can purchase. And remember that until recently, we did have an individual mandate, which said that when you filed your income tax return, you needed to check that box to say that you had insurance coverage. And if you didn't have the coverage, then you would be subject to a penalty. So 2019 was the first year that that went away, and now some states are adopting that individual mandate because they still want their residents to have insurance. But there are different ways to purchase. There's about 10 million people that are insured on the various marketplaces, exchanges, whether they're federally facilitated marketplace-based, which means the federal government designed the template, or a particular state created their own state-based exchange, like California or New York. And now we have New Jersey and Pennsylvania working on creating their own. There's about 7 million more people that are covered via employer plans. We have 12 million people that have taken advantage of the Medicaid expansion. And this was to allow people to have coverage up to 133% or 138% of Medicare federal poverty level. There are 37 states of the 50 plus the District of Columbia that have adopted Medicaid expansion. So there are many more people that are able to take advantage of that plan. CHIP is the Children's Health Insurance Plan. And this has been around since the early 90s. It was reauthorized through 2023, which was nice because a couple years ago we had about 100 days when we didn't have any opportunity for CHIP coverage. So the reauthorization took place for 6 years. It will carry us through 2023. And CHIP does, it's a block grant that's offered to the states. Each state offers their plan for CHIP, which is a little bit different. It does allow approximately 65 to 81% of that CHIP coverage to be covered by the federal government, as opposed to Medicaid, which covers about 50 to 73%. In addition to that, from the subsidy perspective, when you go to the marketplace or the exchange and you are between 100 and 400% of the federal poverty level, you are eligible for a tax credit or subsidy. And about 87% of those who get their coverage through the exchange or the marketplace are taking advantage of that subsidy. In addition to that, if you are less than 250% of the federal poverty level, you are also eligible for an advanced premium tax credit that would help with your It's a cost-sharing reduction that helps with your copay, your coinsurance, and your deductibles. And we've got about 5 million people that are enrolled in that. You can get this coverage through your individual carrier. So there are many different ways to get it. It's not required of you now at the federal level, but it is at many of the states. New Jersey is one of those.
Can you review some popular parts of the ACA, such as coverage for dependents to age 26?
Yes. dependents to age 26 is probably one of the more popular ones. And there are states now, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that are building their own exchanges that have adopted some of these as rules going forward so that no matter what happens at the federal level, they will be able to extend this coverage for kids up to the age of 26. The pre-existing conditions that have gone away has probably been one of the best items to come out of the Affordable Care Act, but it's also one of the more controversial ones. And remember when President Trump was elected, one of the things that he ran on was he wanted to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And since we're now celebrating the 10-year anniversary, we know that he wasn't successful in those attempts, even though he did try a number of different ways to do that. So pre-existing conditions is there. And even when we hear talk about what could be changed today, many of the legislators say that they want to maintain no pre-existing conditions. So for purchase of coverage through employers or through the exchange or marketplace, it doesn't matter what kinds of diseases or conditions or illnesses that you have when you apply for coverage. In most of those cases, you are going to get the insurance without any of those questions being asked. There's also the 10 essential health benefits, which we all talk about, but just a quick review of those. It's the coverage for prescription drugs, pediatric services, preventive and wellness services, and chronic disease management, emergency services, hospitalization, mental health and addiction services, pregnancy, maternity and newborn care, ambulatory patient services, laboratory services, and rehabilitative and habilitative services and devices. So those are included in small group coverage when you purchase that as an employer and also when you purchase individual coverage on an exchange or marketplace or direct from a carrier. And one of the other big advances that has been really helpful is trials for diseases or conditions like some people have certain types of cancer and they're coming up with new ways of potentially treating those cancer or those diseases. And there is now an opportunity to get those trials covered from the Affordable Care Act. So those ways have been very helpful and have expanded the number of people that are covered by the ACA.
The ACA has been in the news recently. Supreme Court is going to hear arguments in their next term. Can you tell us what is at stake?
Yes, I think that the ACA really has never gone out of being in the news for all the things that are happening. Texas lawsuit is what happened. So I had mentioned earlier the conversation about individual mandate. So in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed by the Trump administration, the individual mandate was reduced to zero, which means that there's no longer a penalty for failure to have insurance coverage when you are filing your income tax return. So a number of Republican governors, attorneys general got together and said, well, if there's no individual mandate, then why is the rest of the Affordable Care Act here? So the Texas lawsuit says because there's no individual mandate, the rest of the law should fall. The Texas judge said, yep, I agree with that. However, he passed it on to the Fifth District Court. They ruled on it this past summer, and two of the three judges said, well, we agree with Texas, but we don't know what parts of the ACA should fall. So they sent it back to Texas. In the meantime, we had a bunch of Democratic governors, attorneys general, led by the California attorney general, who said, you know what, this is really important stuff that we need to have a decision on sooner rather than later. So they took it to the Supreme Court and they said, can you make this an immediate priority and can you give us a ruling now about is the ACA still the law of the land? Is it going to stand the way that it is, or do we need to let it fall and do something different? The Supreme Court said we are not going to take it up immediately, but they did say that they would discuss it at their next term. So typically what happens with the Supreme Court is they decide on the number of cases that they're going to hear, and beginning in October of this year, they will start to hear arguments. They will then deliberate, they'll write their opinions, and they will announce all of those opinions, and the announcements usually happen the following year in June. So we don't know at this time when this case is scheduled to come up before the Supreme Court, but it will happen sometime starting in the fall. So it could be that arguments will be going on while we'll be casting our ballots for the new president or to carry over with the current president. But they did agree that they are going to hear the case. So that's potentially a positive, at least to get it on the docket soon. However, it's not the first time that the Supreme Court has done this. There was an initial case about whether or not the individual mandates could stand. And so the Roberts Court said you can't require everybody to have coverage, but you can charge a penalty for those who don't have coverage, which is how we ended up with that check the box on our tax return. In addition to that, we had the King versus Burwell case, which involved tax credits and whether or not tax credits would be available on the individual state-based exchanges or only through the federally facilitated marketplace. We had another case that involved the Little Sisters of the Poor, and it was regarding contraception. It was a group of nuns who, because they don't get married, they did not feel that they should be able to have access to contraception, and furthermore, they didn't need it, they didn't want it, they didn't want to pay for it. So that was heard. Right now, they are hearing a case about the risk corridor payments. And you may remember that back in 2014, the first year that individual coverage was available on the marketplaces, there were a number of carriers that offered plans, but they had no idea what to charge. They gave it their best effort, and the federal government at the time said, if you gauge wrong and you lose a lot of money, we will reimburse you. Well, those reimbursements didn't happen exactly as they planned. They got 12.3 cents on the dollar. So the case is now moving through the Supreme Court about how much reimbursement should happen in addition to the 12.3%. And there's another case that's moving through the lower courts about the cost-sharing reduction dollars, because President Trump stopped those, and the carriers feel that they should be reimbursed by the federal government. So that's a case moving through the lower courts, and they're kind of waiting to see how the Supreme Court rules on the risk corridor and possibly will rule the same way. So we could see a lot of this wrapped up now. Others' arguments will be heard, and we'll get the decision sometime in 2021 from the Supreme Court about whether or not the ACA remains the law of the land as it is right now.
Can you tell us what is being discussed now as our presidential race is shaping up for November?
Well, an awful lot, and it seems to change daily. From President Trump's perspective, as we already mentioned, when he first came into office, he was all about repeal and replace. And he tried a number of different efforts that didn't seem to get too far about how to remove some of the parts of the Affordable Care Act or take it away altogether. There are some things that have been removed, such as he zeroed out the individual mandate. Most recently, there was a budget bill that was passed that repealed the Cadillac tax. It took away the medical device tax. It stopped the health insurer tax or fee, but it did reauthorize the PCORI fee for another 10 years. So some mostly pluses and one small fee that was reauthorized for the next 10 years. Also, there's been some talk about what will Trump do to prepare for the presidential race and the voting in November. We've seen and heard a lot from the Democrats, and we had a huge field of at one point over 25, and now we're down to three. We have Biden and Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard, who are the three that remain. Of course, Biden and Sanders are the two that are the headliners. Biden, of course, was the vice president when Obama was our president and when we got the Affordable Care Act. And so he's a very strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act. And one of the parts of the Affordable Care Act that was taken away before it did pass 10 years ago was the public option. And the public option is an opportunity for a Medicare-like product to be offered at the federal level. It would give premium-free access, and it would be an option similar to Medicaid. No one would pay more than 8.5%. It would allow negotiation with providers for pricing. So think about a private plan but offered by the federal government, as opposed to Bernie Sanders, who is a current senator, and he is a proponent of Medicare for All. So he is looking at having single-payer national health insurance. It would provide comprehensive coverage, including health, dental, hearing, vision, long-term care, mental health, and substance abuse treatments. No networks, no copays, no deductibles. The government negotiates the price with the providers. There is an income based on how much you make, how much you would pay for this, the cost of the two. Biden's plan would cost about $750 billion over 10 years. It's estimated that the Medicare for All plan would be $30.6 trillion over 10 years. Sanders claims that he would save $5 trillion over 10 years in some of the savings of the way that the claims are paid. So lots to talk about as we move forward. I'm sure at some point soon, as these primaries continue, we'll either have our choice of Sanders or Biden, and we will hear more about either the public option or Medicare for All. And then lastly, I wanted to mention that Congress itself, there hasn't been a whole lot that has passed through Congress in the last few years, other than those few things that were attached to the budget bill that happened last year in December. They're still talking about surprise medical bills. They're still talking about paid family leave, paid sick leave, and other ways of changing, limiting, dealing with the ACA in its many forms. But stuff seems to get passed through the House. It seems to stall in the Senate and not get any further. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens, but it's certainly an exciting time when we not only celebrate 10 years of the ACA, but look forward to some of these lawsuits, what's going to happen with the Supreme Court, and cast our ballots in November for our presidential candidate for the next 4 years.
Thank you. Those details on 10 years of the Affordable Care Act, I'm sure we'll be talking more about the ACA in the near future.
Thank you, Jim.
Now, everyone, thank you for listening in, and I would also like to make the following disclaimer before we end. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. Thank you, Shelley, and we hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, then please contact your account manager or salesperson. Thank you.